Now, before I get to what I want to say about the Torah portion, I have to read you, actually, I have to read you a short story. It's not really a short story. It's a very short true story that was sent to me this week by my brother, and it was written by Douglas Adams, who wrote The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, although this is from a different book, and it's a true story, okay? I don't usually like to read things because it's difficult to listen to someone else read, but I don't think you'll have any problem listening to this. This actually did happen to a real person, and the real person was me. Not me. This is Douglas Adams. I'd gone to catch a train. It was April 1976 in Cambridge, in England, in the UK, and I was a bit early for the train. Adams was English. That's important to the story. I'd gotten the time of the train wrong, so I went to get myself a newspaper and do the crossword and a cup of coffee and a packet of cookies. I went and sat down at the table. I want you to picture the scene. It's important that you get it clear in your mind. Here's the table. Here's the newspaper, the cup of coffee, the packet of cookies. There's a guy sitting opposite me, a perfectly ordinary looking guy, wearing a business suit and carrying a briefcase. It didn't look like he was going to do anything weird. What he did was this. He suddenly leaned across, picked up the packet of cookies, tore it open, took one out, and ate it. Now this, I have to say, is the sort of thing the British are very bad at dealing with. There's nothing in our background, upbringing, or education that teaches you how to deal with somebody who in broad daylight has just stolen your cookies. You know what would have happened if this had been South Central Los Angeles. I didn't write it. There would very quickly have been gunfire, helicopters coming in, CNN, you know. But in the end, I did what any red-blooded Englishman would do. I ignored it. And I stared at the newspaper, took a sip of coffee, tried to do a clue in the newspaper, couldn't do anything, and thought, what am I going to do? In the end, I thought, nothing for it, I'll just have to go for it, and I tried very hard not to notice the fact that the packet was already mysteriously opened. I took out a cookie for myself. I thought, that settled him. But it hadn't, because a moment or two later, he did it again. He took another cookie. Having not mentioned it the first time, it was somehow even harder to raise the subject the second time around. Quote, excuse me, I couldn't help but notice, unquote. I mean, it doesn't really work. We went through the whole packet like this. When I say the whole packet, I mean there were only about 8 cookies, but it felt like a lifetime. He took one, I took one, he took one, I took one. Finally, when we got to the end, he stood up and walked away. Well, we exchanged meaningful looks. He walked away, I breathed a sigh of relief, and sat back. A moment or two later, the train was coming in. So I tossed back the rest of my coffee, stood up, picked up the newspaper, and underneath the newspaper were my cookies. Here's the last paragraph. The thing I particularly like about this story is the sensation that somewhere in England, there's been wandering around for the last quarter century a perfectly ordinary guy who's had the same exact story, only he doesn't have the punchline. Now, when I read that, because I read it just 2 days ago, and because I was already thinking about the Parsha, it occurred to me that actually a lot of life is like this, in the sense that two people are engaged in the same transaction, broadly speaking, but they have totally different experiences of what's going on. Because these two men had totally different experiences of what was going on at the time when each thought that he was eating the other's, that the other was eating his cookies. And if you look on page 128 in the Chumash, you find something not entirely dissimilar. It's a little bit of a stretch, but it was such a good story. This is Abraham. His wife has just died. He needs to get her a burial cave. And he finds out that the burial cave that he wants to buy is owned by Ephron the Hittite. Now remember, that Ephron and Abraham have no relationship whatsoever. They come from different worlds, they're different people, but they are negotiating over this cave. So what happens? Ephron was present among the Hittites. So Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham in the hearing of the Hittites. We're now on page 129. What does Ephron say? And all who entered the gate of his town. In other words, Ephron is speaking in front of everyone. And when you speak in front of everyone, how concerned are you to sound good? Very concerned, right? No, my Lord, hear me. I give you the field and I give you the cave that's in it. I give you in the presence of my people, bury your dead. Incredibly magnanimous, right? He's saying, just take it. It's all right. You know, you can almost hear the Yiddish accent. Doesn't matter. Go ahead. Just take the cave. I give it to you. It's all yours. Abraham bowed low before the people of the land and spoke to Ephron in the hearing of the people of the land, saying, if only you would hear me out. Let me pay the price of the land. Accept it from me that I may bury my dead there. Abraham is living in a different mental universe. He knows that in the end, he's going to have to pay for this, and he'll look better if he insists on it. But Ephron doesn't want to insist on it, because if he does, he's going to look bad. So what does he say? I think that this is masterful. I love this. Ephron replied to Abraham, saying, my Lord, do hear me. A piece of land worth 400 shekels of silver. What is that between you and me? Go and bury your dead, right? He doesn't say, I'm going to charge you. He says, look, what's 400 shekels of silver? And of course, Abraham ends up paying him 400 shekalim, 400 shekels of silver. Now, what world were they both in? Ephron was in a financial world. He wanted to get a fair price for the land. Abraham didn't care. Whatever price Ephron would have named would have been fine. So Ephron thinks he's won the negotiation because he got his price. But Abraham isn't actually negotiating over a price of land. Abraham is negotiating over the future because he knows that he's going to be buried there and his children are going to be buried there. And he hopes one day his grandchildren will be buried there. And the two of them live in completely different mental universes. Now, in this case, it turns out that the convergence of the mental universes works. That is, they agree on a price. But too often, when we're in a conversation or a negotiation, we don't realize that the other person lives under different assumptions and ideas than we do. And we are very much like Adams and that other gentleman, or like Abraham and Ephron. We, as the reader now, in both stories, understand the universe of both people. But it's worth remembering, especially when you're in some kind of contentious situation, that if you have the ability to project yourself into the mind of the other, then you may be able, as Abraham does here, to come to an agreement. Because here, Ephron couldn't possibly understand Abraham's aim, but Abraham understands Ephron's. And he makes a financial sacrifice in order to get an ideological and a theological bargain. And for him it is, because after all, Me'arat HaMachpelah, the cave where all of the patriarchs are buried, is only remembered today not because of what Ephron got for it, but because of what Abraham envisioned that it would be. So let's bring everybody in.